It's a little over a year since I started Admission Straight Talk. Our most popular show since then has been one that focused exclusively on entrepreneurship. I thought it time to return to that topic and have invited Jeff Reed to join us today for episode number 21. He is director of the Entrepreneurship Initiative at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Before we focus on that topic, however, I want to welcome you, our listener, to listen in on my conversation with our special guest. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Thank you for joining me for this segment. As I always do, I also want to mention three housekeeping items, all of which you can handle at the end of the show, so you don't have to go anywhere. First, after you listen to the show, please leave your feedback, be it good or bad, in the show notes and on our blog in the form of an iTunes review. I'm going to give you a little hint that we love 5 stars, or by hitting the plus sign on Stitcher if you prefer to listen on Stitcher. And you can always email me at labraham@accepted.com. 2, as part of our rich treasure trove of MBA admissions resources, we have a series of blog posts focused on entrepreneurship and specifically MBA programs that have strengths in entrepreneurship. I'll include a link to the show notes, which you can find at info.accepted.com/21. And I look forward to adding this blog post to that resource. I want to invite you to subscribe, if you don't already, to Admission Straight Talk in iTunes or in Stitcher. And again, I'll include links in the show notes at info.accepted.com/21. Now, to the topic for today, entrepreneurship, and specifically entrepreneurship at Georgetown University. I know that many of you are interested in entrepreneurship, being your own boss, and developing your dynamite idea into the next Facebook. And that gets me back to today's guest, Jeff Reed, director of the Entrepreneurship Initiative, say that 3 times fast, at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Jeff earned his MBA from UNC Kenan Flagler. He has served as chairman of the North American Entrepreneurial Studies Leadership Group and has taught entrepreneurship both at UNC and Georgetown, where he is an adjunct professor. And where in 2009 he launched the Georgetown Entrepreneurship Initiative to, quote, catalyze entrepreneurial thinking and activities across the campus of Georgetown University. Jeff, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Well, thank you for having me, Linda. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Can you please describe the Entrepreneurship Initiative at Georgetown? What is it and how does it work?
Well, sure. Thanks so much for this opportunity. Entrepreneurship is such a fascinating topic, and every university has a different flavor. At Georgetown University, we had the amazing opportunity to take a wonderful university with deep, deep history. We're now over 223 years old, I think.
Wow.
And take a university with the strong traditions of this school and add a huge entrepreneurial component onto it. And so what we have done is we've created a whole series of courses and activities to help promote and inspire entrepreneurial activity and thinking. But our primary goal is not a specific set of courses or activities. Our primary goal is to build a culture that supports entrepreneurship in a variety of ways. And that culture and a community that loves entrepreneurship, and that's what really makes our program stand out.
What are key qualities of an entrepreneurial culture? And I'm kind of thinking of the book I read, Startup Nation. But what would you say are those key qualities?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's an understanding of what entrepreneurship is. There are a lot of reasons why universities struggle with entrepreneurship. It goes against the traditional structures of disciplines, and there's probably nothing more opposite from an entrepreneur than someone with tenure, just by nature. and so often the academic structures of credit hours and learning things to get that first job, and there's a whole lot of reasons why it just doesn't naturally fit in the university structures.
Uh-huh.
But there are a whole lot of other reasons why it does and why it thrives. And
what are some of those?
First of all, the students who walk in our doors are going to be entrepreneurial whether we like it or not. And by we, I mean pretty much anyone in higher education today. There's a generation of young people who have grown up learning more and more about entrepreneurship. It's more and more a part of our popular culture. And so if we're, and then when they get to campus, they want to start their own businesses. Many of them already have before they even show up. And that's, I think, something different than 15 years ago when I was first into this business. I mean, it used to be you could tell students what they should do related to their entrepreneurial ideas. Now it's more kind of hearing their own ideas and coaching them to maybe make one decision versus another. But you can't tell them not to do it because they're doing it already. So part of what makes a university culture more supportive of entrepreneurship is just recognizing some of these differences. You know, knowing that universities don't naturally understand entrepreneurship, but figuring out the fact that young people love it. And by young people, you know, we're talking about undergraduates as well as any of our MBA students and other graduate students too. It's so they come here, they want to learn about entrepreneurship. Many of them are already doing it. You know, not everybody wants to start their own company. Many of them want to go work in a startup, or maybe they want to do that a few years after they graduate. All those are things that we recognize and accept and try to support.
When I got my MBA in the late 1970s, I got it in 79 actually, UCLA at the time, which is where I got it, was one of the few schools that had a program in entrepreneurship. And I can remember very early in the program, I don't remember what the occasion was, I think we were just out on the lawn having lunch, and I was meeting a new fellow student, and, you know, what are you concentrating in, what's your major, whatever, and he said to me, he said, entrepreneurship, do you know what that is? And he wasn't being funny. I did, but it was a perfectly legitimate question because some of the other students in the circle that, you know, didn't know what it was. So there's obviously been a sea change in terms of the concept being barely known or not known, or somebody focusing on it, not expecting it to be known, to now where it's the hot new topic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And 15 years ago, people asked lots and lots of questions about, you know, should we be teaching entrepreneurship? Mm-hmm. And I no longer hear those questions. You know, it's now more about how do we do it better?
Yeah, or how do we do it? How can we jump on the train?
Yeah, it's no longer a yes or no, should we do this or not. It's now, okay, we realize this is important. Now let's figure out the best way we can do it.
Now, I recently visited Georgetown, which in addition to having all the history that you mentioned is an absolutely stunning campus. And I met with Sherry Hubert, the Associate Dean for MBA Admissions, and Caitlin Stevenson, Assistant Dean of Admissions at Georgetown. And they both emphasized how Georgetown's location, and in this case I mean in the heart of D.C., not just its view of the Potomac, you know, the heart of D.C., the capital of the U.S., how this location gives Georgetown a unique ability to straddle the divide between business and government, individual initiative, and government regulation. How does the entrepreneurship initiative take advantage of that location?
Yeah, being in Washington is a wonderful thing for us. You know, most entrepreneurs don't like to engage with government. I don't know if that's a nice way to say it. You know, most government folks traditionally don't understand entrepreneurs and vice versa.
Right. There's probably a lot of suspicion between the two groups.
Yeah, and you know, most entrepreneurs, they nobody likes over-regulation.
Right.
Entrepreneurs are often the folks who say, okay, tell me what the rules are, and I'm going to figure out a way to beat the system.
Right.
And, you know, so there is a disconnect between the traditional Washington, D.C. federal government kind of culture and what one might think of as an entrepreneurial culture. Mm-hmm. But an amazing thing has been happening over the last several years in that Washington's entrepreneurial culture is growing. You know, this doesn't mean that everybody in government all of a sudden understands entrepreneurs, but what it does mean is that there is a thriving ecosystem that supports entrepreneurs within the city. It's not going to overcome the government culture anytime soon, but it is moving fast. You know, and I would say Washington, if you don't think Washington can be entrepreneurial, well, a lot of people said that about New York City a few years ago.
Right.
And in just a few years, you know, you took what was traditionally a big banking and an arts type city, and you've really seen a huge entrepreneurial culture thrive there. It doesn't mean it's bigger than the banks, but it's big and it matters. So the same thing's happening in Washington. There are a lot of great companies getting started here, and I think that's only going to continue to grow. If you think about Washington, D.C., what does make it interesting or unique? You know, one thing is this city has for many, many, many years been a powerful magnet for attracting young, ambitious people who want to change the world.
Right.
Young, smart, ambitious people. And this university, Georgetown, has been doing that too. And so that's a recipe for entrepreneurship. Now, many people may come to D.C. because they're interested in government or some or World Bank or one of the other great organizations around. But they kind of often will, more and more will gravitate towards an entrepreneurial community, maybe join a startup or start their own company. So, come to D.C. and check that out. It's probably much better than you would expect.
I had known that there was in D.C. or more in Northern Virginia, I guess, an entrepreneurial ecosystem, if you will, when AOL was doing well, and headquartered in Northern Virginia. I had thought that the entrepreneurial ecosystem basically in the D.C. area was in decline, along with the decline in AOL's fortunes. Was I wrong?
Well, things come and go.
Okay.
I think that and they evolve. And, mm-hmm. 15 years ago or 13 years ago, mm-hmm. the dot-com boom, mm-hmm. Northern Virginia was a huge hub and did continue for a few years after the dot-com bubble burst. There's a big telecom focus. Companies like AOL, Nextel, and many others were kind of anchoring that community. And some of those companies are still thriving. Others have moved on in one way or another. But one of the things that's interesting that's happened is there's more of an entrepreneurial community within the city itself.
I see.
Years ago, there were fewer business people living in the city. That's changed. It's mm-hmm. part of a worldwide, certainly nationwide trend of young, smart people wanting to live in urban areas. And, mm-hmm. D.C. has a terrible commuting reputation, but there are lots of people now who live in the city and don't even own cars.
Wow. Kind of like Manhattan.
That's right. Yeah, it's more and more like that. At least some parts are.
Right.
We still have a thriving community in Northern Virginia, and there's a big biotech community on the Maryland side.
Uh-huh.
But the city itself has now become the hub more and more for the region-wide entrepreneurial activities. So it's different than it was a few years ago, and the part that's within the city is really vibrant and growing. It's kind of exciting to see.
Do you feel, and this is kind of what I was trying to drive at with my earlier question, do you feel that not so much that the entrepreneurship exists alongside the government or in spite of the government focus of D.C., but that there are actually advantages to kind of having to deal with the regulation, having this massive presence of government so close while starting your company or launching your new idea or whatever it is? I mean, are there actual advantages, or is it just that they somehow manage to coexist?
There are definitely some advantages. So, on the one hand, the Washington, D.C. area, believe it or not, has a huge population of technology talent.
Okay.
Right. There, people look around and they say there's not a ton of engineering talent, but it turns out there is, and so many of them are now locked up within government contractors.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many folks that work in these big Beltway Bandit type firms. Many of them are already doing their own entrepreneurial things on the side, and many more of them are expected to be doing so as budget cuts, sequesters, et cetera, happen. So there's this huge amount of talent that is traditionally kind of been locked up within the bigger organizations, either government or government-related, but those groups are starting to be unlocked. So there's a lot of talent around. That's one of the things that's an advantage here. Another is being close to policymakers does give you an opportunity to see different trends, often ahead of the rest of the world. So you can kind of know there are certain industries that are highly regulated, and being around the policymakers helps you stay in touch with that. Just about every big tech firm, pretty much every big company in the world has somebody here in Washington that keeps an eye on things.
Yeah.
And all those CEOs come through here. And so, if you're trying to do business with other companies, mm-hmm. they're going to have a presence here in Washington. So that's another opportunity. There is the global marketplace. You know, there's it's such a global city. If you're trying to do business around the world, there are embassies and representatives, and, you know, whether the State Department or the embassies or the World Bank. You know, all these things have opportunities that entrepreneurs can take advantage of, depending on what your interests are in your industry and that sort of thing.
Okay. Your bio says that you believe strongly in the power of entrepreneurial communities and networks to create social value. Can you elaborate on that concept, perhaps provide an example, and maybe even specifically provide an example related to the entrepreneurship initiative at Georgetown?
Sure. Entrepreneurial communities, it's a concept that's been around a long time, but it started to gain some momentum. You know, whether it's here in the U.S. where different regions or cities or states are looking for ways to help their own economy, can I get jump started after this latest downturn, or around the world, where more and more people realize that entrepreneurship is one of the most powerful ways to create social good. You know, the traditional models of economic development around the world in developing countries, you know, traditionally there's been a lot of foreign assistance and aid and, you know, let's build some roads and bridges and help people. Well, now more and more there's a recognition that the next step to help these countries and these communities is to help their own indigenous entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And so that could be, you know, whether you're working in a developing country or somewhere here in the U.S., bringing entrepreneurial people together, helping them grow and thrive and learn from each other, that's what kind of an entrepreneurial community is. You know, there's an ecosystem that supports every great entrepreneurial region in the world.
Right.
And those can be replicated. And they're going to be different everywhere, but you can build that. And as a result, you know, entrepreneurs in that community are more likely to be successful. You know, they can learn from each other. They don't have to make all the same mistakes on their own. And they can find the talent and the service providers and others that can help them be more successful too. So here, you know, earlier in my career, I saw this in action in the Research Triangle of North Carolina. You know, there's a great entrepreneurial ecosystem there. And it's grown up over decades. And here in Washington, D.C., we have the same thing. Georgetown University is one element in the regional entrepreneurial ecosystem. You know, we like to, you know, we benefit from what other people are doing, but we also are part of the engine that grows it.
Right.
And so we're sending, you know, hundreds of young people into the community every year, whether there are MBA graduates who go work at a venture fund or start their own business or go work at a fast-growing company, or our undergrads or everybody that does internships in the community. All these things are, you know, some of the ways that we contribute to the community. And our students get a great deal of benefit from that. And whether it's, like I already mentioned, you know, we have an internship program where we have lots and lots of local companies that come looking for talent. You know, they either during the summer or during the school year. And we have connections with all the local venture firms. We work with the local venture association. There's this amazing new incubator and accelerator and kind of co-working space called 1776 that we have a strong relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just one good example, the two of our MBA students, actually I think it's a team of three or four of them are on the team, and they're starting their own business. And this summer, they are working full-time as part of the 1776 incubator. It's in downtown Washington, D.C., just a few blocks away from the White House.
Really?
They were offered space there, you know, partially as a result of they were a finalist in the competition that we hold on campus, our Startup Hoyas Challenge.
Uh-huh.
And so we had representatives from various local organizations who attended, and they, when they like a student team, and they say, hey, why don't you come be a part of the effort that we're doing here? So we try to build a revolving door between the business community and the university. Students getting off campus and people from the business community coming on campus. And Washington, D.C. gives us a great opportunity to do that.
On the graduate level, let's focus for the moment on MBAs. You've given a little bit of insight into how the entrepreneurship initiative functions. Can you tell us a little bit more? Like, obviously there's a curriculum, there are various clubs. What is the Entrepreneurship Initiative doing for MBA applicants?
Sure. So we have a robust suite of activities. We do have a whole concentration of coursework, several different courses. We have a couple of dozen courses overall related to entrepreneurship as part of our concentration. So that's part of it, is the coursework. And the majority of those courses are taught by entrepreneurs and angel investors and people with real-world experience. So we're pretty proud of what you can learn in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
But in addition to that, we have a whole suite of other things that, you can compete in our campus-wide business pitch competition. You can get mentoring from our entrepreneurs in residence. You can get to do the internships, as we already described. So there's a whole lot of things. And we do recognize that every student's going to have different interests coming in. Not everybody wants to start a company when they graduate. For those that do, hey, we're right here for you. We have several who are doing that right now. We have our own incubator program that's really geared to those students. But for everyone else, maybe you want to work with someone else who's doing an entrepreneurial thing, or just learn as much as you can while you're in school, go work for someone else for a while, and maybe start your own thing later. So we do recognize that there's a whole lot of paths that work out, and so we try to help the students figure out the right path for them and then help them go down that.
Now, the Entrepreneurship Initiative is not just for business students at McDonough, not even just the undergrads and the grads. It really is for anybody on the Georgetown campus who has entrepreneurial interests, be it a law school applicant, med school student, law school student, whatever is relevant, correct?
That's exactly right. We work with faculty around the university. We do believe that, as I mentioned early on in this conversation, universities have their own silos and disciplines, but entrepreneurs often thrive best when they're able to cross over different disciplines. So we love bringing different types of people together. We've helped to start a student entrepreneurship club within both the medical school and the law school in the last few years.
Wow.
It's amazing. Those folks, particularly the med school, they don't have a whole lot of free time.
No, they don't.
But if you think about it, many of them, once they do finish those many years of school, some of them are gonna set up their own practice somewhere and end up running a business. And there's so much change going on in the healthcare industry that it's important for them to be able to understand change and ambiguity and all that sort of thing, and the business models of the organizations they work for. So there is actually a lot of people there interested. Within the law school, there's a new set of courses and clinics that actually help. The law students are learning how to serve entrepreneurial clients. Meanwhile, some of our MBAs and other students who are starting companies get free legal services from those law students. So we're able to kind of bring the best parts of the university together to help each other around entrepreneurship.
That's fascinating. Do you advise students, undergraduate or graduate, to work for someone else before starting their venture?
That's a question we get a lot.
Yeah.
For me, it's not a black and white answer.
Okay.
I think that for some people, it's definitely valuable that they probably need to work for someone for a while. But for others, it's not necessarily the right call. It's fine to go start your own thing. There's a wonderful naivete that can come from somebody not knowing what they don't know. And that's often how some of the greatest inventions and things are done, is someone who never listened to everyone that said they couldn't do it. But on the other hand, it's often really, really valuable to learn on someone else's dime. So, what I generally do is I try to listen. If the student is really, really passionate about what they're trying to do, and they do have some validation from the market that it can work, and it's really what they want to do, then I do encourage them to go for it. I don't see a reason, a good enough reason to tell them to wait and learn from and try it 3 years from now after you've learned from somebody else. By that time they might not have that passion anymore, and You know, the worst case is usually, the worst case is they try it for a while. If it doesn't work, then they can go work for somebody else. So that's always going to be there.
What qualities do you think students should seek to develop within themselves if they want to go into entrepreneurship? And this would be regardless of the discipline that they're formally studying.
I think that's a great question. You know, the best entrepreneurs are generally people who really do know themselves. So kind of that self-knowledge, self-awareness is the number one skill. You know what your strengths are. Know what your weaknesses are. Don't let your weaknesses become a blind spot that leads the company to failure. So that just general self-awareness is the number one thing that I think students should do or should seek. And we have some of our courses focus very much on that topic. You know, and part of knowing yourself is also knowing your own risk profile. You know, if you try this thing and it fails, what happens? Are you going to be shunned by your family? are you going to be, you know, are you personally going to feel so bad about yourself that you'd never do it again? Or do you know, okay, you know what? It's no big deal. I know I can try again and learn from this and do better the next time. So just a general sense of self-awareness and knowing where this fits into your overall plan for your life.
So that's not really a matter of studying specific fields. It's actually, first of all, it's very difficult to know if you are or are not self-aware. Second of all, I think self-awareness typically comes with maturity. So it's probably harder for the younger applicants to be genuinely self-aware. Are there any particular courses that you feel, other than, again, classic entrepreneurship courses, that you feel are particularly useful? And I don't mean by that to ignore what I think is very valuable insight that you just gave in terms of encouraging would-be entrepreneurs to be self-aware. I mean, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, so I think in terms of some of the other courses that we recommend, things like sales and negotiations are skills that are incredibly important and valuable in a variety of career paths.
Oh yeah,
but are often overlooked when people think, you know, that hard quantitative skills are more important.
Right.
Just as an example.
Right.
So you know what really defines startups early on is can they find customers that care? And so being able to be really good at sales is important. Part of that is a listening skills. And again, that's listening is not necessarily the title of a course you'll find in an MBA curriculum.
It should be.
But if you're asking what quality students should develop, then I think that's one of them. Many entrepreneurs have that stubbornness to not listen to the naysayers. But often that stubbornness can be a downfall if they don't listen to customers and trends in their market.
Right. It's excellent advice. MBA applicants in particular frequently worry that if they say they have entrepreneurial goals, they want to get an MBA and then start their own business, they may be at a disadvantage in the admissions process because startups usually have lower salaries, and lower salaries reduce rankings, and they just don't look as good to future applicants. I mean, all the schools want to say, you know, I'm going to earn, you know, six figures when I graduate. I don't know if you play a role in admissions, but how would you respond to that concern?
Well, I've had that conversation with our admissions officers, and I'm very happy to say that our school overall, we want to do what's best for our students. You know, we want to create programs that we believe are excellent, that are transformational educational experiences. And so if we have students that choose to do something that like an entrepreneurial pursuit, or, you know, on a similar vein, something that has a social impact slant to it, those are things don't pay as much. Yeah. And we want to do what's best for our students and help them pursue their own passions and goals. We actually think that rankings do matter, but we don't advise students to do something that's going to help us with our rankings, if that makes sense. You know,
right.
The rankings, the numbers on starting salary is not going to drive our advice to students more than doing what we think is right for the student.
Well, I think their concern is more about will that concern color admissions decisions. In other words, if they in their application say, I want to go into entrepreneurship, I have a business idea, I want to launch that idea immediately upon graduation, are they putting themselves at a disadvantage in the admissions process?
You know, I can't say directly because I'm not directly involved in the admissions process,
right.
But my assumption is that would actually be to their advantage.
Okay.
You know, the business school has made a priority around entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear, you know, I hear from our admissions team that it's one of the very, very top priority interests of our students coming in. And I think that the school wants students who will benefit the most from our business school. And so if someone makes a strong case for why they have an entrepreneurial career interest and how coming to Georgetown will help them pursue that career, then I think that would be looked upon favorably.
Okay, great. Just to reinforce what Jeff just said, when I did meet with Sherry Ubert and Caitlin Stevenson, the deans of admissions at Georgetown's business school, MBA program specifically, and I asked if they'd be interested in a podcast, the topic they wanted was entrepreneurship initiative. They suggested that Jeff be on the podcast. And I think that, in addition to making an excellent suggestion, I think that also testifies to their interest in attracting students with entrepreneurial interests and goals. And basically, it supports what Jeff just said. Now, Jeff, we've just about run out of time. I very much enjoyed learning about entrepreneurship at Georgetown and the Entrepreneurship Initiative. Where can applicants go to learn more about it?
Well, we have our own website specifically for the Entrepreneurship Initiative. Yeah. It's called StartupHoyas.com. StartupHoyas.com. And that's for the overall Georgetown entrepreneurial community. So students, alumni, anyone interested in entrepreneurship at Georgetown has a home they can come to learn more.
Okay. Great. I'll definitely include a link in the show notes to that. And thank you again very much for taking time from your day on a busy Monday. I'm sure it's a busy Monday. We will definitely include a link, as I said, in the show notes, info.exhibit.com/20 to startuphoyas.com. Listener, thank you too for joining us. I'm going to include a link to the Georgetown Entrepreneurship Initiative as well as to the recent shows about entrepreneurship in the show notes. Finally, just a quick reminder, as I indicated at the beginning, please share your feedback. 5-star reviews on iTunes are particularly welcome, and you can leave any kind of feedback on iTunes, the blog, or by emailing labraham@exhibit.com. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by exhibit.com, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.